morning. It is a special pleasure to be with you this morning because this is the first time I am preaching as an actual reverend. And in our Unitarian Universalist world, we don't have a lot of rules necessarily, but we do have some traditions, one of them being that one does not wear a stole until ordination, and so this is a beautiful gift from my home congregation in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, that my parents presented to me on Sunday, and so I wear it proudly and with a sense of connection to my family and my past and my present here with you. So thank you for having me. And I will say that I'm actually not supposed to be here today. We had a guest speaker, Reverend Susan Newman from All Souls Church, scheduled, but unfortunately her mother is having some serious health problems, so I offered to reschedule her, and she very happily agreed. So we will look forward to having Reverend Susan in our pulpit sometime in the future, and we hold her and her mother in our prayers today. So I wonder how many of you have heard that first line from our reading before from Channing, "I am a living member of the great family of All Souls." What a line. What a beautiful, elegant way of capturing our individual relationship with the whole of humanity. I'm a living member of the great family of All Souls. But it wasn't until last week, actually, it was 2 weeks ago, that I heard the rest of the quote for the first time, and I still feel like it too is embracing me from the past. I am a living member of the great family of All Souls, and I cannot improve or suffer myself without diffusing good or evil around me through an ever-enlarging sphere. I belong to this family. I belong to this family. I can hardly perform an act that is confined in its consequences to myself. Others are affected by what I am and say and do. So what does it mean to belong to this family? How are we related to and responsible to each other? Now these, of course, are huge questions that we can approach from an infinite number of angles, but since the theme of the month is brokenness, that's the approach that I'm going to take. And you know I'm not a dour guy, but I still enjoy the fact that my first sermon as a reverend is going to be about sin. But it's also going to be about salvation, so hang on. And one of the things I like so much about this Channing reading is that he doesn't just say that he can improve himself and spread good through an ever-enlarging sphere. He says also that he cannot improve or suffer myself without spreading good or evil. And I think many of us have a hard time thinking about our capacity for evil, or at least our capacity to make serious mistakes that cause suffering for others and for ourselves. I suspect that most of us here today have made some sort of bad decision in the past that we wanted to explain with a phrase like, "I wasn't myself that day. I wasn't myself that night. I wasn't myself at that point in my life." Perhaps you've said that before. I know I have. And at times, I've really wished it was true, but it's not. And actually, there is a great risk to that kind of thinking. According to Thomas More, a psychotherapist and former monk, that kind of disowning, that labeling a part of the self as not self, quote, creates a division in us. And that division becomes an obstacle to authenticity. So rather than helping us to become our true selves, suppressing our mistakes and our problems actively makes the work harder. And so our challenge then is to find a way of integrating the bad with the good that enables us to deal with the pain and the brokenness without getting stuck there. And so that's what I'm talking about today, this relationship between brokenness and beauty, between sin and salvation. Now, in my quest to find a framework, something happened that I most certainly didn't see coming. I found that I believed in a version of original sin. A religious humanist. Believe me when I tell you that no one was more surprised than me. So here's my understanding of original sin. It starts with just the basic reality that all human beings are born into a world that, while wondrously beautiful in some ways, is also horribly broken in others. And it's not broken by Adam or Eve through some sort of divine drama that's passed on through the generations. It's broken by the simple reality that humans are imperfect beings. And so as a result, every single human person is born into a world that is scarred by oppression and exploitation and violence. And since this brokenness is completely unavoidable, I think it deserves the word original. Now, for my definition of sin, I agree with the many theologians who reject the notion that sin is an individual act or error, but rather that sin is most appropriately understood as a state of separation. Sin is separation. And so here's the framework, and it's adapted from Paul Tillich, who I think is one of the greatest theologians of the 20th century. And Tillich says that the state of sin, this state of separation, is threefold. We're separated from ourselves, we're separated from each other, and we're separated from what he calls the ground of being, which I think is a wonderful way of talking about God or the holy or the universe. And so, in my view, if sin means that we are separated from ourselves and each other and the ground of being, then what is salvation? First, let me say a little more about what the separation looks like, how this manifests. I believe that we're separated from our own selves by insecurity, by concerns about our bodies, concerns about social standing. We doubt our own worth and potential. And one of the ways this works is that we suppress things about ourselves or our past that we don't like. And whatever the mechanism, I think the end is the same. We question our own value. Now, sadly, it's all too easy to find evidence of our separation from other people. And I don't mean separation of the superficial variety, like we don't know our neighbor's names or something. I mean deep, deep separation. The kind of separation where we really question the humanity of other people and other groups. Now, I will admit that I am a strong, strong supporter of immigrant justice, of comprehensive immigration reform. But there are still times when a very negative image of immigrants jumps into my mind. And it's an image that I know bears no factual connection to what I rationally and personally and professionally believe about the immigrant community. And so one response to these images is that I can beat myself up for having these feelings. Another response is to say, of course negative images come up on occasion. The media's portrayal of immigrants is often awful, and we live in a country that has been legally and culturally mistreating immigrants for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so the separation that I feel between us has very little to do with their choices or my choices, since I'm not an immigrant, but has a lot to do with this broken context in which we meet as people. Now, the final part of Tillich's equation deals with a separation from the ground of being. And separation from being, I think, happens when we approach to life too narrowly. We get stuck in the mundane details of our lives and of material things, and we forget the wonderful beauty and mystery and miracle that is the universe, that is being. So, as a counter to separation, Tillich talks about grace. For me, I think, or as a counter to separation, yes. He talks about grace. I think if there's going to be sin, there's got to be salvation. So I want to talk about salvation. And I submit to you that if the sin is separation, then salvation means right relationship with ourselves, with each other, and with the ground of being. Now, in traditional Christianity, salvation is something that you arrive at after death. And traditionally, that's something that only happens to some people. In our universalist tradition, we hold that salvation is accessible to all people. But I think, at least for me, as a religious humanist, salvation is something that happens on this earth as an ongoing process in our lives as a result of our human choices. At every minute of every day, we can choose to work towards salvation. We can choose to work towards right relationship with ourselves and others and being. But it's not enough to just focus on the doing good, because as much as we want to do good, we are consciously and unconsciously also doing bad. That is part of our human nature. It is inescapable. That's the original sin piece. That regardless of our intentions, we are still part of these larger systems. We had no part in creating the broken immigration system that exists today, but we are still actors in this production, whether we want to be or not. And so part of what right relationship demands of us is that we see the whole picture and take responsibility for our piece in it. So let me share a story from my past about, frankly, not seeing the whole picture. So when I was in college, I got very involved in Unitarian Universalist justice work, and I was passionate about it, and I wanted to just do as much good as I can everywhere I could. And so one of the ways that I did that was I wanted to speak up often for justice, for equality, for inclusion. But eventually, someone clued me in on the fact that actually white guys have a tendency to talk too much. And that one of the things that I was doing by speaking up often and everywhere was I was marginalizing the voices of the people that I was supposedly trying to help. I was taking up so much space as a white guy in some of these organizing meetings that women and people of color didn't feel like they had room to speak up and to participate, because I wasn't seeing the whole picture of what it really meant to be an ally, and that part of being an ally sometimes means being quiet. And that was painful for me to learn, and I like to talk. So it's not a lesson that I would say that I have completely learned and can do perfectly each time. But now I know. I know that it's not enough to just focus on the positive. I also had to deal with this broken context and what it really means. Now, that's sort of a more of a relational, cultural level piece, but I want to say more about how the brokenness works at a very personal level. And I want to read you some of the words from, or some of the words and research from Brené Brown, who is a research professor at the University of Houston Graduate School in Social Work. And, And she speaks about this in one of those, it's a TED Talk, sort of an amazing collection of powerful stories on a website called TED. And she talks about the power of vulnerability. And the focus of her research is factors which distinguish people who have a strong sense of love and belonging from those who don't. So people who have a sense of love and belonging from those who don't. And this is what she finds. There was only one variable that separated those who have a strong sense of love and belonging and the people who really struggle for it. And that was the people who have a strong sense of love and belonging believe that they are worthy of love and belonging. That's it. They believe they are worthy. Now, having arrived at this conclusion, she went on to investigate what it is that keeps people from having this sense of worthiness. And what she eventually boils it down to was that the folks who had a sense of worthiness had courage. Not courage in an external sense like bravery, but the courage to be imperfect. The courage to be imperfect. They had compassion for themselves, which Brown says is absolutely a prerequisite for being kind to others. But they also had connection, she says, as a result of authenticity. They were willing to let go of who they thought they should be in order to be who they were. They fully embraced vulnerability, and they believed that what made them vulnerable made them beautiful. That didn't mean that vulnerability was comfortable or easy or fun, but nor did it have to be excruciating. It is simply an inevitable part of being alive and being human. Remember our waitress. I'm sorry, I just totally forgot about you. Completely transformed that moment for us, for all three of us, by just being vulnerable and being honest. And it opened a pathway to right relationship. Because as it turns out, the path to wholeness doesn't lie around our brokenness or away from it, but right through it. We cannot achieve right relationship with ourselves without dealing with our mistakes and our imperfections. And we can't achieve right relationship with others without seeing the bigger picture, without taking responsibility for what is ours. For us to be in right relationship with undocumented immigrants in this country, we need to recognize how much our exploitive economic policies and our outdated, inhumane immigration system are responsible for the current circumstances. Now, the bad news is that figuring out how to be in right relationship with ourselves and others and the ground of being is hard work. The good news is that we don't have to do it together. No. We don't have to do it alone. We are all in this together. All human beings are flawed. So there's no reason to pretend that we're perfect. Striving for perfection is hopeless. And in my experience, leads us to do some senseless and damaging things to protect that myth. Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. As Channing said, we all belong to this family. Being in right relationship with ourselves requires honesty, and it requires love. And so I ask you, what would it look like for you to be in right relationship with yourself? What wounds or mistakes in your past must you confront and embrace? What would it look like to love yourself more? Being in right relationship with others requires learning and listening. It requires seeing the whole picture. Are we seeing the whole picture? Are we hearing other people's stories? Are we taking responsibility for our part? Now, I said that we don't have to find right relationship alone, but for me, there is a deeper truth, which is that we cannot find right relationship alone. Because we are imperfect, limited beings dependent on each other for survival, we can only find salvation together. And so, friends, let's help each other out. Let's love and learn and listen and be grateful and be vulnerable together. Let's encourage each other to open up. Let's have compassion, yes, for ourselves and for others and for the world. Let's have the courage to be imperfect. Let's love our beauty and our brokenness. Amen.